Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Hello everyone and welcome back to Behind Massive Screens, a game development podcast here from Massive Entertainment in Malmö, Sweden. My name's Dode and I am continuing my conquest of this podcast. As you can see, I'm moving slightly closer to the guest, pushing Petter to the side.
Oh crap, I didn't think of that.
And well, yeah, Petter is here.
Okay, I'm out.
Still.
I'm out. I'm still here. How are you, Dory?
Oh, I'm good. I'm good. It's good. Been a fascinating couple of weeks.
Yep.
And lot to do. Check out the vlog, by the way. It should be out.
True.
And yeah.
Anything else? Any other news that will completely date this podcast?
Wait, let me check my NDA. No, nothing.
No, nothing. It's been a couple of weeks. I have a problem. Mm-hmm. I realized this morning. So we did 12, 13 episodes of the Fika sessions, and then we've done this, and we're roughly around episode 14, 15, yeah, somewhere. I'm running out of good t-shirts to wear on the podcast.
Yeah,
it's not a problem for the audio listeners, yeah, but for me in the morning.
Content creator dilemma.
Yeah, I have a few good left, but then I need to. And I don't think Massive's going to expense. I can't expense to Massive.
So. We'll give it a try.
Yeah, we'll give it a try.
But
we have a guest.
Yes, we are joined here by Hanna Rosvall. Did I slaughter that?
Yeah, yep. No, it's all right.
Okay. I'm Icelandic. I'm excused. But she is a user researcher here at Massive, I did a vlog on the Games Lab that was more focused on the public who wanted to maybe become playtesters. Mm-hmm. But I am fascinated to hear more, like, the data of it and the deeper kind of dive for developers on why that is such an integral part of game development. So I'm excited.
Yeah. What kind of science did they do on you? What kind of experiments did they do on you when you were at the Games Lab? Well, is that what you want to find out? That's what you really want to know.
I mean,
what data do they have on you now?
Yeah, somewhere they have my heart rate monitor and
yeah,
readings and stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, that's it. I was in that blog. I had my 5 seconds of fame in that blog. I was looking very serious, taking notes like, I see you guys. I know everything you do.
Indeed. But now you get your hour of fame as we dive into not just your job role, but you and your journey in the game industry. So
yeah.
First of all, like, how did you... No, wait. We start with the role. You see, I'm still taking over the podcast. I haven't quite figured out...
You want me to write it down?
No, it's fine.
Okay.
What does a user researcher do?
Well done, Dory.
User research would be the short answer. But I like to see user research as like the spider in the web, because we're connected to a lot of different teams and we're also the link to the player. So we're really close to the players because we, as we saw in your vlog, we bring people here to test our games. And we bring insights to directors, design teams, everyone who's interested, basically.
So it really is like the actual like practical what happens when a player actually gets to play a certain game.
Yeah.
No longer theory.
Yeah, exactly. And it's in all stages of the game development. So it can be like from the very earliest, okay, we have something to play, let's bring people here to play it, to we have a very finished game and we can do a full walkthrough so people can play it from the beginning to the end, basically.
Yeah. But the first thing when I saw the Games Lab, I thought, is this quality assurance? But it's not. This is a separate thing. Or do you do both?
No, we're not looking for bugs. I mean, there are different people who do that very well. So, we bring people in and we're really interested in their experience. So I listened to an interview with an architect once, and he said that he likes to bring people into the houses he builds to see how they interpret the space. And I really, like, that quote stuck with me, and I think it's the same thing we're doing with games. So we bring people here, and we see how they interpret the space or interpret the game, because there are always, like, design intentions, or we think that people could play or should play things in a certain way, but they might not do it. They might have a completely different interpretation. Yeah. And that's really what we're interested in. So we usually say that you can't be a bad playtester. Like, there's absolutely no judgment in how you play. It's not like we're sitting there and, you know, oh, what a noob. How could they die there? It's not about that at all. Like, if you die somewhere in a strange way, and let's be honest, we've all been there. It's just interesting information for us, honestly.
Yeah, maybe a little note to take down. Maybe we can have that tweaked a little bit.
Yeah, exactly. So we really bring, like, unfiltered information. Well, of course, because we get a lot of data from, especially like a full walkthrough that can be 6 days. So people come here for 6 days and they play, and we get a lot of data. So we don't just bring that to the design team, like, here you go. Yeah. So we, of course, filter it, you know, to bring the most insightful information. But it's not like we have an agenda or we want to make people happy. Like, okay, let's say that they really like this. Let's tweak the data so that it looks good. That's not what we do. We try to bring, like, the real user experience through, you know, we do surveys and we have telemetry. So just gathering data from, like, under the hood. Sometimes we do focus interviews or focus groups. I mean, and then we do observations as well. So we have many different data points that we can put together.
Yeah, and I have to think, like, you mentioned 6 days for, for, like, a play test. But in order to hit all those metrics and making sure that you're having a spread out an even distribution of the type of players, I mean, that must be a long process before you even get close to the play test.
Yeah. Yeah, so we have a recruitment process, and we don't, I mean, everyone is welcome, quote unquote, everyone. So, of course, we look at, we might want them to play a certain type of games, like, for example, open world action adventures, because we're doing that kind of game and it benefits them to have that experience and also, like, the kind of data set of having played a certain amount of those games. So they know, you know, compared to other games I've played, how do I experience this particular game? And we also want them to enjoy themselves. So that's kind of, yeah, we do some filtering, but we, like, in terms of ages or genders or whatever, like, we, that's more open. We really want to have all kinds of people, all kinds of experience levels. So you can be very casual, or you can be a, like, hardcore gamer, and you're welcome to our playtests.
I think there's a lot of listeners and viewers right now that are perking up. Like, I get to play video games for 6 days straight tell people what I think about it.
No,
this is the best. No, you they get to tell you what they think.
But no, no others.
Don't go on Reddit. I know you want to.
I don't want to. So everyone who comes here, of course, we're very, really conscious about, you know, not having any leaks, because that will impact a lot of people who are working very hard on games. Yep. So all playtesters sign an NDA, and they don't talk to each other either. I think that's the hardest part during lunch breaks, when they have something, they all have something in common, like they've been playing this game, and they don't get to share their experiences with each other, because we don't want them to influence each other. Like, if someone's like, yeah, combat is so easy in the lunch break, and someone else is like, yeah, well, I didn't have the same experience.
What I really like about it in general, we're going to get into even more of the details of what you've been talking about, is it really is, in a way, like video game science, because you hear about focus groups to take people in. What do you think about our brand? What do you think about a TV show?
Yeah.
But you go much further than that, as you said, with telemetry and stuff, like, really follow their journey in a much deeper way than just, what do you think about this?
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, telemetry, it's like recording the temperature in a way. So it's very neutral. Like, the weather won't have an agenda in what degrees it's outside. And it's the same with telemetry. And it's very interesting for us, because in a survey or in a focus group, an interview, people might say one thing. I really enjoyed this part of the game. And then when we look at their data, their telemetry, they might not have engaged with a system at all. And it's like, okay, that's interesting. So it's, we try to do like a triangulation, it's called, so having different data points saying the same thing. That's when we can trust the data. So if we observe something, we can see it in the telemetry, we see it in survey results, that's like, okay, this is a thing, this is something we should bring to the design teams.
Right. It kind of, I'm just thinking back to, you know, when I was a kid playing Nintendo and I was yelling at the TV and my mom came in and like, why don't you just turn it off if it's making, no, I'm loving it! I'm just thinking in the exit interview, oh, I love the game. And then you look at the telemetry and it's just all over the place.
Yeah. Yeah, I know some, I mean, they're polite, our play testers. So we don't, I haven't seen any yelling yet in the room, but who knows? But we see them. And as you experience as well, like we can see you while you're playing. So there's like, we can see the game and we have an eye tracker, which is like measuring your eye movements. So we can see where you're looking on the screen. We have a video so we can see your face. And there are some fun expressions there from time to time and I mean, they vary. So sometimes someone might be dying for the 10th time and they're laughing, and someone else might be like really angry or really like emotionally impacted by the narrative or something. So it's really precious to be able to see that, like the real player experience. And we always encourage designers to come down to the lab to take a look at that. We don't allow them to go into the room and stand behind players like, no, go there. but just seeing that, because I think it's easy to get disconnected when you're like up at your desk and doing the game and programming or, you know, whatever you're doing, designing. Mm. And you're like, there's actually real people who are going to play this.
Yeah, you've played through the same section 20 times, so you know how to get through it.
Yes.
Yeah, we're going to get back to also how the games lab actually looks, because it looks pretty cool. But before that, before we dive even deeper into all of these things, let's ask the second classic BMS question. Do you remember?
I got this. So how has your journey been into game development? Like, how did you become a user researcher?
Yeah, that was okay. The first one was better. You did that better. But yeah.
Yeah.
next week. Next month.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think it was good. Clear. Yeah. I understood it right away.
Just on my side.
Yeah, I'm just trying to undermine you during the course of your takeover.
Upvote or like, you know. Mm.
Sure.
Yeah, maybe we should do like an A-B test. So you ask me the question. See, this is the user researcher.
Oh my God. We invited the scientist.
Yeah.
And well, other things in your background that's actually irrelevant to this. But yeah, Dory's question. Back to Dory's question, I guess.
I mean, my road to user researcher has been paved with twists and turns. Like I wouldn't have thought that I would be here. And the way I usually describe my career is that I've been working with brand stories and strategies since 2009. So I like have these two sides of me. So I have one side that's very intuitive and creative and another side that's like analytical, strategic. And I've been lucky enough to combine those two during my career, which I didn't know was possible. But I started at a brand and design agency. And at the time, I didn't really know what a brand and design agency does, but I learned a lot of things. So I got to participate in like everything from interior design projects to packaging design to brand strategies and all of that scope, because I was doing my bachelor's degree in marketing at the university at the time. And from there, and I was also doing market research, which is kind of fun. So it's full circle coming out to user research. But I can use a lot of that experience, because I was like designing these interview studies and doing the interviews and interpreting the results, and that turned into brand strategies, which is very similar to what I'm doing today, but now I'm doing for games.
When you mentioned that during the pre-interview we did, it just made perfect sense kind of to bring that mindset and bring that background into this particular field.
In hindsight, it all makes sense, because it feels like everything kind of led me here, although that sounds cheesy, but it really feels like that. So I studied marketing, majored in marketing at the university. And when I was doing my bachelor's thesis, I got an internship at a brand and design agency. Wasn't really sure what a brand and design agency does, but it was very fun. And I realized that I'm quite good at it. And I've always had like two sides to myself. So a very creative, intuitive side, and then a more strategic, analytical side. And I've been lucky enough to combine those two. And it's funny because at the Brandon Design Agency, I was helping out in these market research projects. So we would design interview studies and do the interviews and then analyze the results. And that turned into brand strategies, which is very similar to what I'm doing today. So that's kind of funny that I was doing that already in 2009. Then I move on to a more like the creative team. So I was in the wonderful world of advertising for 8 years. So I was a copywriter and creative lead and also a brand strategist. So again, like the, I don't want to say the head and the heart, but like more of the creative, just creating and then strategies. Then I started my own company. So I was a freelance writer and I was working with management teams to help them figure things out, doing workshops. And I was also teaching at the university marketing. So I've all like had this academic background like from my studies, but I've also kept in contact with my university. And been fun to do some teaching there and meet some young minds who have a different perspective on marketing. Then there was a plot twist. My husband co-founded a startup, so we moved to Sweden, and I had no idea what I was going to do here, but I continued with my company, and I got into the world of startups. So I was working at an incubator for a while, and then I continued freelance. So I was working with a lot of startups, and suddenly I was the CMO of a sustainable fund that was a startup. and then I got my first steps into the game industry. So the company that my husband co-founded was like, he founded it together with psychologists. So it was like an adventure game for kids to teach them maths. So it was based on, 10 years of research and my husband, who's a designer and developer, he was like bringing the tech and the game side to it. So because I had a long background in creative writing, I was asked to be the narrative designer and I was like, I'm not sure what that is, but I'll do it. Sounds like fun. And it was kind of a dream come true for me as well to create this, you know, mathematical world and all the characters and write the dialogue. And I went really all in because I grew up with Lord of the Rings and I'm like, kids can handle like big lore and right, narrative. Yeah, yeah. So that was super fun.
Yeah, that's kind of an aside though, but it's what was it like to working with kids in that way? Like games and kids, that has to still like, okay, the big lore and stuff that kids obviously can handle, but it still has to come with a lot of challenges. Sorry, side note, but it's interesting.
Yeah, no, it was really interesting and humbling as well. So I think the thing that attracted me to games, like once I started doing it, it was not too different from the creative projects that I had done in advertising, for example. But it was a different thing to actually have people interact with the product and be in the game, and they need to understand it and they need to stay engaged. And I mean, kids are very honest and quite harsh. So we...
Perfect playtesters.
Exactly. Worse than gamers.
Yeah. No, and that's actually where I got in contact with Massive as well, because Massive was helping out with the game, which was very appreciated. And we got to do a playtest in the lab. Mm. So I was standing there and I thought it was really cool. And little did I know that I would actually be working there.
This feels right.
Yeah, this feels right. Like, I wonder. Everything led me here, I'm telling you. nobody was very cool to see kids, because we had some kids come in like every now and then and play the game. But being there on the other side, because we have this kind of interrogation room set up where we have this one-way mirror and we can see them, and seeing the kids, like some of them were struggling and some of them were thriving. And it was like, yeah, it was a bit nerve-wracking. I was like, okay, will you like, do you like it? It was really cool. And I realized that I wouldn't be in gaming, because I really like seeing Massive here and being able to be on this little like project adventure game. It sparked something in me. So when this opportunity came, this user research position, I was like, yeah, I could do that. And I also think that I got to a crossroads somehow. Like, I was feeling done with marketing. I don't know. I had some kind of existential crisis. I was like, just looking at ads and logos and everything. Like, does any of this make any sense? Like, I don't know. I got to a point where I felt like I could continue like climbing the marketing ladder and that career path, or I could do something completely different. I was like, this is my chance to do something completely different. So I came here for an interview, and I think I was a bit of a wild card in the recruitment process because I haven't been in AAA games, or I have a lot of transferable skills, which was the feeling I had, and it has been confirmed, so I'm happy about that. I had a bit of an imposter syndrome at some point. I was like, who am I, this marketing person coming in here working with games? But it's been super fun. Everything led me here, and I feel like I'm in the right place.
It sounds like the market research thing really fits still. It's different, of course. We talked about focus groups and telemetry and stuff before, but it's still, when we had the pre-interview, it just made sense somehow to have that background and bring someone in that can analyze that side of things. Not really brand analysis in this case, but still how people interact with worlds and interact with characters and stuff.
Yeah, and I mean, it's not that, it's different worlds, of course, but in advertising as well, like I'm taking something and creating it and like in the form of a campaign or whatever it might be, so that someone wants to interact with it. Like the user has always interested me. And again, thinking back, like it makes sense because I've been doing this in many different forms, but it's very similar to what I'm doing today. And I also think that it's a good thing that I've been like in the creative team myself, because I feel like I know how designers think, or I know how to interact with them. Not like, I don't know, it maybe sounds like, you know, you need to know how to talk to designers. It's not what I mean. I just mean that I maybe have a mindset from being in the creative team myself.
Yep.
So I can relate.
So moving over to kind of from your background, that's been really interesting, over back into the more details of games tasks and how the game lab is set up and stuff. To start out, kind of like on going through everything, really brief, like how does a user test look? What's the cycle look like? Where does it start? Where does it end? And where does it go from once you're done?
Yeah. It's interesting that you said cycle, because that's actually how we work. So it's a lot of doing the cycle over and over again with the research. And the test really starts with, I mean, we usually schedule tests in advance just to be sure that we have access to the lab and everyone is available, etc. So we plan ahead and we ask the design teams, like, is there a feature you want to test? Is there an area you want to test? Or are we in some projects, you know, ready to do a full walkthrough? And that kind of determines, is it a 2-hour test? Is it a 3-day test, 6-day test, like whatever the time frame. And then we start designing the study. So we have some questions that we want to answer. We know how many players we're going to get here. Sometimes the test might be in several countries at the same time. So that, you know, requires some sync with other labs that we're working with, sometimes across different time zones. So it's really cool to be able to do that. You know, technology is awesome. So we start designing the study, and if we're going to do surveys, we design the surveys. If we're going to do interviews, we prepare the questions and like a script for the whole test, or like a protocol. So, you know, players come here, we do this and this, and then we do this and this, and what the test will look like. And then it's the test itself, and players come here, and hopefully everything works as we planned. We got a lot of data, and sometimes we need to adjust mid-test if something, you know, just happens. Or we get a request to, could you actually focus a bit more on this? So, I mean, we have a plan, but then we also need to be able to improvise if needed. When the test is done, we have, again, a lot of data to analyze, so we get started with that, and then we write a report. And that can be long or short, depending on, again, what the test was like, if we had a lot of insights or just a few insights. And then we present it to the team. So we usually have like a debrief session where we, you know, talk them through the results, and it's possible for them to ask questions and all that. So that's like basically the basic user research cycle.
And when you like write your report, is it usually that you're looking, for example, you're testing an area in a game, does the design team come with, oh, we want to know what they think about this specific thing? Or is it just you let the players into the area and then you report it back to the design team, you know, how it was experienced? That was not a very good, well-phrased question, but I think, you know, go on.
Yeah. No, sometimes it's very specific. Like we will just test one system in the game. And we might create the experience for the player in a way. So, I mean, because we're developing the game, we have some possibilities to just send them through a portal or just like put them here in the game. And then we put them here in the game. So we might create an experience where we want you to go to this place and do X, and then we want you to go to this place and do Y, and then we just like test that in a very focused way. If, you know, the smaller the test or the most more focused, the more focused questions we have as well, just like we're looking at these five things. If it's a full walkthrough, we're looking at basically everything. So then we're interested in, yeah, basically everything. So those reports are usually very extensive because we want to know everything and report as much detail as possible to the design team.
Yeah. You did talk about it before, but still like to dig into it, like because we're always essentially looking for playtesters.
Yes.
At Massive. It's a constant thing. We have posters, we have social media posts, we have on the website, we have requests coming in from Games Lab all the time on the communication side of things.
Massive.se/playtest.
There we go. There's a link in the description. But what people, we already kind of covered this, but let's dig into it again. What kind of people are you looking for when they apply?
If you're listening to this and you feel like I could be a playtester, then you're sign up. Like you are a playtester, I promise you.
There we go.
It doesn't matter if you play once a week or once a month. Or if you play Dark Souls with a like Guitar Hero controller, or if
like
you
Dory
play,
does,
right? Do I wish, I wish.
Or if you play like something, I don't know. It doesn't matter. Like we are honestly not interested in your skill level. I think many people might be a bit nervous to sign up. Like, you know, it's not a test. We're not assessing your skill level. We're just assessing your experience. And not even assessing. It sounds like a test again, but we're just interested in your experience.
So it can actually be
observing
good.
Observing their experience.
Yes, observing the experience. Exactly.
So I guess it can even be good to have people that are quote unquote bad at video games, like not very experienced. Yeah.
Definitely. And I think it's really interesting. Like sometimes in a playtest, we can see that someone is really struggling with combat, for example. And it's so cool to see the learning curve as well. And that's interesting information to give to the design team. Like this person was struggling, but actually the game was teaching them how to be fairly good at combat. Or they kept struggling all the time. And on the third day, they were like, I want to go home because this is too difficult. Like none of that, again, no judgment. All of that is good information for us.
Yeah, and so when people sign up for a playtest, they don't sign up for a specific playtest. They sign up to be in the pool of playtesters that you then choose based on their profile.
Yeah. I know a lot of people would like to sign up for certain playtests, but they don't know what game they're going to play until they come here and we're like, congratulations, you're going to play. And then they find out.
Yeah, but if you do want to playtest a certain game, if you don't sign up, you definitely won't play it.
That's a very good
That's
point.
That's smart.
So.
That's actually, yeah. And I want to say, too, that you might be invited back for a playtest. So if you do one playtest, we might not be able to invite you back for that particular game. Like sometimes we do. Sometimes we want players who have been playing a certain game to come back because it's like, you know, under construction. But then if you've played that game, we might invite you back to play another game. So like stay in the pool.
And I guess you might invite somebody back to try a certain section again to see if the reiteration in the design process has actually benefited and made it easier for them more.
Yeah, totally.
So how does it, when people come in, you don't see the reception that we see from here through the window. But they come in, they go to the lab, which is over there for your information. What are the first things they see when they come in through the door? Like what's the user experience or the player experience coming to the lab?
Well, they see a coffee machine, free drinks and snacks.
Well, there we go. I'm sold.
That's like, hope that's a good first impression. We have quite a comfy kitchen area as well. And then that's basically all they see.
Yeah, and then the rack where you put your phones, because you're not allowed to bring your phones in.
No phones, no watches, or anything you can record with. So we're kind of, we're very strict about that. And then they walk straight into the room where they're going to spend, you know, everything from 2 hours to a week. So they carefully select their seat, you know, it's important to have the right seat. then they have, so we've set everything up. They have like a notepad so they can make actual notes with pen and paper. And they have the controller and the computer, and usually the game is open or a survey if we wanted them to do a survey before they start. So they just, sit down and get started.
Yeah.
And we usually try to let them play with as few interruptions as possible, unless it's a test where we're like, okay, now we're going to go here and let me come back and put you in another place.
Unless you're doing the parent test.
Yeah. Exactly.
And then they also have like a stream deck to like say, I believe, to like say yes or no, like positive experiences. Right. I saw it when I was doing the vlog and I was like, you can figure out what that is.
You felt like you'd press that?
Press all the buttons.
I was having a good time, so I was like, yes.
What does this button do? No. We use that sometimes. So they can, like, because sometimes things happen quick in a game and they're like, oh, I really like that, or I didn't understand this. They have a option to press a button and let us know.
Does anyone feel intimidated coming in? Or is just so relaxed that, of course, you have the coffee machine, you have free snacks. You were just there. How did it feel for you, Dory, coming in?
I felt quite relaxed.
You work here, though, so.
True. But, I mean, of course, if you want to see the Games Lab and kind of how it functions, you should watch the vlog that I did on that. And basically everybody that I talked to of the people playing, they were very, very relaxed. And they praised the food, they praised the atmosphere and the way they were treated by the staff. So everybody was, like, really positive. And then I asked, like, and so what have you been playing? And everybody was,
it's like
stop immediately. No.
Yeah, you try to get some nice. Yeah, no, but they also get free lunch. So we try to create a really like relaxed Friday evening atmosphere, and you know, just hang out with the playtesters. So we have lunch together and we talk about games and life and everything,
I guess creating that kind of relaxed, natural atmosphere is incredibly important to get the playtest to actually work or be natural, at least.
Yeah, and it feels like sometimes they make friends among each other, and I mean, we all love games there, so it's something that we have in common. But I think it's important that they feel welcome and that they feel like they can be themselves and they can ask anything. Like, there are no stupid questions. I know that's also a bit of a cliche, but it's true. Like, if you're stuck, put your hand up, ask us. And again, there will be no judgment at all. We just, like, okay, let's see. Let's see what you're going through.
It's part of the observation.
Yeah.
Yeah, speaking of observation, there's one thing that actually, and now it's probably because I work here and I know what it looks behind the scenes. It's that you talked about that one-way mirror.
Yeah.
That's the interrogation room mirror.
Yeah.
And I know that you're sitting behind on your computers watching. That feels a bit intimidating to me. Am I being a wimp now?
I mean, when you're in the room, you just look yourself in the mirror. I know they're watching.
Who's watching the watchman?
I think you forget about it quite quickly when you're playing. I can forget about just about anything when I sit down after 10 minutes to play a game.
So that's true.
I don't think that's a big
issue. Okay, fair enough. Well, it's for you. Yeah, it's because
that's
I work
me
here.
That's me taking
and
over
I know
the podcast,
looks,
shooting Petter down.
I'm going to the Games Lab to play video games instead of doing this. But how does it actually look behind the scenes? Like, what is on the other side of that one-way mirror?
A lot of screens.
Yep.
Where we watch a lot of screens, like screens within screens, because we stream all the screens, the player screens, and we can see them there. And that's just for us to keep a track of them instead of us being behind their shoulders, like, don't mind me, which would be even creepier, I think.
With a notepad.
Looking like in that vlog. No, but I don't know. Like, would you prefer that, Petter, to have me behind your back? Like,
that'd be probably be even more scary.
Yeah. No, honest, I think it's natural to feel a bit self-conscious, like someone is watching me and like I'm playing.
Yeah.
But honestly, I feel like most people forget about it. And they know it's just us. It's just them, you know. And
yeah, the nice people the that nice gave people. Us coffee and food.
Yeah, exactly. And
then just left.
Yeah.
We're having fun.
Yeah. No, sometimes playtesters can be like, oh, I died in such stupid ways. Like, you must have laughed at me. And then we're like, no, we didn't. Of course we wouldn't laugh at you. And then you know, it's... I think just to hear that, because I understand that it can be a bit creepy. Someone watching you, you're gaming. Yeah. And I mean, often people are gaming at home alone or with their partner or their dog or whatever.
Yeah.
And it's like, yeah, I mean... It's human not to want to do mistakes or look good, or, but we really, really try hard to create the atmosphere of, you know, we do stupid things in games too, and it's okay.
Yeah.
And we won't laugh.
It kind of would feel natural for me having friends that were just like standing behind me, backseat driving.
Yeah, I mean.
Like, you suck at this.
When you were talking about people watching you playing, I just got flashbacks to when I started streaming, because I used to stream every single day for 2 hours. And those first couple of months were rough, because I was like,
Yeah.
I died.
Yeah. Yeah, I had the Division community watching me play. I think one of the biggest memories I have is someone writing, "You big noob, better." Welcome to streaming. Anyway.
Yeah, there's right one now. Thing that I forgot to touch upon, because you mentioned you were working sometimes with other labs in other countries.
Yeah.
Of course, with your previous project, Massive helped you playtest here.
Mm.
And of course, Massive Entertainment being a part of the Ubisoft family. It's not just Massive Entertainment games that are being tested in the Games Lab.
Yeah. Yeah, sometimes we get other games too. So we help each other out. And that's really cool to be a part of the Ubisoft family. And I mean, there are some amazing games being made. So it's very cool. And also the experience just in this building of people doing all kinds of games. Like I was talking to someone and I told them that I was playing Assassin's Creed Origins. And they were like, yeah, I was in the team that made the pyramids. And I was like, I was in those pyramids yesterday. And it was very cool.
But where would you see kind of going into, I think, just telemetry?
Mm.
I'm jumping back in my own brain.
Yeah.
What kind of telemetry do you use exactly, and how does that influence the test? How does that come into play?
So I don't know the technical details of it. I have very skilled colleagues who know exactly how it works. But we record all kinds of things, like where do players die, or what kind of weapons do they use, or what kind of systems do they engage with. You know, all kinds of things, that everything that can be measured. What quests are they tracking or completing, or what side quests are they finding or not finding? Like, sometimes data that isn't recorded is also interesting, if that makes sense. Like, okay, no one is finding this side quest. Like, can we do anything about it? So the sky is the limit for what can be tracked.
Yeah.
And then there's things like, you know, like you mentioned, eye tracking, there's a heart rate monitoring. And I believe somebody mentioned to me while I was filming the vlog in the Games Lab, emotional arousal as well. So it's not just in-game telemetry, it's actual player telemetry.
Indeed, yes. Telemetry, it's data from the game experience. But then we have what's called biometrics. So it's the eye tracker, you know, where are you looking? And that might be interesting, because sometimes there are these tips popping up in the game, like, did you know that you have this weapon, or have you, you know, done this and that? And those tips, if we see that players aren't looking at them, then we might bring that information to the design team, and maybe we need to, you know, change the position or the timing. Like, if they get a tip at the moment when they're ambushed by enemies, like, they might focus on the enemies and not the friendly reminder. but we can also measure galvanic skin response, which is kind of a lie detector thing. And then there's also something called EEG, where we can measure brain waves almost in real time. So there's some very cool things that can be done in the realms of biometrics. And again, like on the theme of things that led me here, I wrote my master's thesis about how neuromarketing and how brain research can be used as a part of the design process. And I kind of went all in with that. So it was like 200 pages and just, yeah, I'm happy that my professor had the patience to see that through. But it was so interesting, and it's very motivating for me that it's something that I can like kind of start digging into again here, because there's, I mean, as I said, we use different data points, telemetry and the players reporting their own experience through surveys, and we might do interviews and the observations, and we put all the data, those data points together. But there's like, someone once said that in the tales of our inner lives, we've all always been unreliable narrators. And that's a thought that's like haunting me because there's always some kind of bias. Like when we fill out a survey or answer an interview, like no matter how comfy the situation is in the lab, like I trust you, I can be real with you, like people might still filter things. Mm. And we have good methodology, we have good methods, so we can get reliable data, but there's just like, you know, that extra, going that extra mile to measure brain waves, for example, or biometrics, that's subconscious, that's something that we can't, it's just happening, you know, it's our body communicating. So I find that super fascinating.
I'm not sure if I'm loving it or I'm being afraid of terms like neuromarketing.
Yeah.
Like beam the brands into my brain.
Yeah.
Mm.
There are, yeah.
There are ethics ways.
I mean, of course we need to have a discussion around ethics and all of that, but it's from research point of view, it's fascinating. Yeah. I mean, okay, this is like going into the brain realm, but our brain has like a hierarchy. So number one is life-supporting functions like breathing, heartbeat. Number two is our sense of balance. And number three is our emotions. So the emotions are like very high up on the brain's hierarchy list. So our emotional reactions influence a lot of what we're doing. And that goes, we want to think that we're in charge and that we have, you know, control and we are humans and we are thinking, you know, but actually research shows that it's like 95% of our brain capacity or brain, just the works of our brain, we are not conscious of. Yeah. So it's 5%. Some research even say it's 1%. So wow. It's a lot of things we don't know. And I want to find ways to tap into that unknown. And I like totally get that it might be creepy. But again, it's interesting. And like, can we find out something more? I don't think it's the solution to everything, but just having that alongside other research methods is something that I want to explore in the future.
Let's do a full episode on the brain of a gamer, I think.
Mm-hmm.
We'll invite Hannah back, and that's all we're going to talk about for 50 minutes, because I want to hear more about this.
Yeah, so which gamer is going to...
We're going to do a live stream of you. We're going to put things on you, and then you're going to play a game.
I was afraid it was going to come back to that.
It's always going to come back to
it's
that.
It's always the first one that says you. I was waiting for my chance to say it was going to be you, but yeah, you got in just, there first.
You should learn more of the undermining stuff I tried before. Speaking of that, kind of leads into the question, where do you see the future of kind of user research in focusing on video games in this case? Is that where you think it will go naturally?
Yeah, I mean, I'm a bit biased because I'm so interested in this particular area, but I really think that it's the subconscious processes, like the between the lines and the things that we can't just like ask someone, like, what did you think? And then you give me an answer, but what's behind that? And maybe that will teach us something new. Because again, as I said, someone might say something in an interview or in a survey, and then the telemetry might show something else, like what could biometrics show? As another layer of that experience, and when we put all those pieces together, like what might we learn?
Yeah,
to get the full picture.
Yeah.
So for the coming back, this has been fascinating to hear about this process. But what would you, people at home? I think again, we've covered some of it. But people at home watching, they're going, I want to be a playtester.
Mm.
What kind of anything you want to tell them straight away? Like just apply now.
Yes, just sign up.
There we go.
Yeah, that's the message. I think you summed it up pretty well, Dory. Like, if you don't sign up, that's 100% not being able to play any games. Yeah. No, but it's, I think it's a cool experience to have, to be able to test a game that's under development, because there might be, you know, some placeholders, and we bring in people fairly early, I'd say, just because we want to have real players. Like, we don't want to sit with our games like until it's really pretty and looks, and then we might need to change something. So we bring in people pretty early, and we really appreciate that people have the mindset of, you know, yeah, I don't it's okay if it's a robo voice or if it's a placeholder or I interact with a box instead of, you know. So it's a cool experience, I think, to having your like set of gamer experiences, and then you can go back to playing Elden Ring or something.
But then definitely the heart rate going up.
And somebody that wants to apply, is there any sort of prep that you need to do beforehand, or is it just you just show up as you are? I guess, yeah, that's what you want.
I mean, we ask you to do a survey, just because we need some background information. It's a part of the recruitment process. But other than that, like, you don't need to prepare for the game itself. You don't need to game or play 5 hours a day to be like prepared, and you know, you just show up as you are. And
well, you don't know which game you'll be playing
exactly,
anyway.
Exactly. So. Yeah. So you don't know, researching the lore and everything. That's like, no.
But if you're really interested in playtesting, I guess, for Massive Entertainment, of course, if you want to come to our lab here, you kind of need to be close by to Malmo, preferably, unless you really want to travel far.
Yeah, because that's the thing. If we're doing a test that's a week, you need to be able to be here for the full week. Yeah. And just for your own comfort, like if you have a 5-hour commute, that might not be a nice journey to do every day.
Yeah. And then you're already tired once you sit down to play.
Yeah, exactly. And they play, usually it's from like, a 5 hours a day approximately that they get to play games. Yeah. So it's full days.
Yeah. But then you should probably research if there's a games lab close to you. And you might be able to sign up for that.
And I just want to add one little thing that should entice you to become a playtester, and that it, as someone who has signed so many NDAs and gotten to know stuff before it goes public, it's kind of good to have a secret. So you can walk your head high amongst your friends and like, oh yeah, I know.
Sorry, can't say.
You don't know, but I know. Just a little extra bonus.
True, very true.
Sold. Thank you so much for coming, Hannah.
Thanks for having me.
It's been really interesting.
Really enjoyable.
Yep. And,
and a subject that I want to learn so much more about as well.
Yeah. But you just want to go back and play more games.
Okay,
well,
true.
Right?
I just want to sit in the game.
Let's go. Thank you very much for watching /listen, like, subscribe, all of that stuff. Leave a review.
And sign up to become a playtester.
Massive.se/playtest.
See you here, maybe.
Bye.
Bye.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.